Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Russ Baker, you know, you are so respected as the guy who comments on congressional stuff. What do you make of the outcome of the 2014 elections?
Well, I think it was one more volley across the ping pong net by an American electorate that doesn't really quite know what it wants. I mean, clearly they, you know, elected President Obama in 2012, and in 2014 they proceed to reject him and his party, and in a massive way too. And this is kind of characteristic of what's been going on in American politics, and that is, I think, a kind of collective indecision about the role of government, about the place of America in the world. And I think that if the people are undecided and are unwilling to opt for one side or the other decisively, I think you're going to get the kind of politics that we get, because after all, members of Congress are elected by the people, and they, to a very great extent, reflect the opinions and the outlooks of their constituents.
And yet, Russ Baker, it is so interesting to me that the Republicans, I think, were allowed to grab the narrative and to keep on in classic propaganda ways to repeat this narrative over and over again. Obamacare is bad. Obamacare is bad. Obamacare is bad. Obama is bad. And lately, I see the president getting up on his hind legs and really beginning to give it back. Maybe he should have done that sooner.
Well, you know, the Republicans did something very interesting, Alan. They did something called framing. They took all of the problems that emerged, and some of them were totally unconnected with each other. Ebola, the problems with the Veterans Administration, the guy jumping over the fence at the White House, Benghazi. And they put a frame around it, and they called this picture incompetence by the Obama administration. Of course, you throw in the rollout of the Obamacare website. And so what you have then is a picture that the Republicans, you know, manipulated with incredible skill and said, you know, these folks are the gang that can't shoot straight. Let's get them out of there. And basically the public bought into that narrative.
I think that's true, but I also think that Obama is to blame in a way, because he didn't answer the way he should have answered. He didn't take them to task. I think he's doing that now with the immigration stuff and everything else, and basically he's saying, you know, you don't get to do that to me. And I think people admire it when somebody fights back.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's odd to say this, Alan, but in a sense Obama is just a little bit too high-minded.
Yeah.
You know, he's not really a very good politician, considering how much success he's had. I mean, certainly he is the worst retail politician, probably since Calvin Coolidge, in terms of his willingness to interact with Congress, for example. Now, to be sure, a lot of the Republicans in Congress just hate the guy and everything he stands for, so that any amount of inviting them over to the White House for a drink probably wouldn't have made that much difference. But I think on the margins, it might have helped a little bit. And I think one of the illustrations of that is what happened in 2012 with the so-called fiscal cliff, in which the deal was cut not by Obama and the Republicans in Congress, but by Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell. I think it tells you something about, you know, how you make deals with your sworn enemies in Congress. But I think certainly he did come out swinging, certainly with the executive order on immigration, which of course enraged the Republicans. But that's going to have consequences for sure. I think the Republicans are right now sort of trying to figure out exactly how they're going to deal with it. Certain avenues are closed off to them. For example, they cannot prohibit him from enforcing the executive order by depriving him of money, because the agency that's charged with this new program of deferred deportations is the U.S. Center for Immigration Services, which is self-funded mm-hmm. by the fees that that prospective immigrants pay. There is a possibility of a lawsuit on the part of Republicans in Congress, but members of Congress have no standing in the eyes of the Supreme Court to file such a suit. So how exactly they're going to push back is unclear, but the fact is the president has begun to push, and I suspect that the next big push is going to be on environmental issues.
Well, you know, they'll find a way, but the question is, will the American people in the end appreciate Obama? You take a look at the stock market right now, you look at the job numbers and all the rest of it. Yeah, it's true, he's unpopular. The polls all show it. But, you know, people can have a retrospective on some of this. I suspect he's going to go out of office and he's going to be more popular than a lot of people think he is. Hey, Ross, I wanted to ask you about something. You've got a book now. Is Bipartisanship Dead? And it's about the U.S. Senate. They passed an immigration law in a bipartisan fashion. They've done some things bipartisan. Is bipartisanship dead?
No, bipartisanship isn't dead. And in the course of thinking about this book, I decided I had to talk to senators. So I lined up interviews with a dozen senators, six Democrats, six Republicans, and I just put the question to them. And without exception, they said, no, bipartisanship is not dead. But what was clear from the interviews was what they were talking about was within the committees on which they serve, and each senator serves on three committees. There are 20 committees in the Senate. There's a high degree of bipartisanship, that Democrats and Republicans are agreeing with each other all the time. The problem is when the committee finishes its work and the committee report goes out to the floor, everything collapses because basically Harry Reid is there trying to protect Democratic senators who are up for re-election and will not tolerate legislation that puts them in a difficult position. Similarly, Mitch McConnell retaliates by filibustering. So although you have, at one level, a high degree of bipartisanship, at another level, you have almost none at all.
So I have only 2 minutes left, but I want to ask you a question. What's Mitch McConnell really like?
I'll tell you a story, Alan. I once asked that question of Harry Reid. And Reid said to me, when Mitch and I are alone in a room together, I'm the chatterbox. And of course, Reid is certainly, one of the most taciturn people. He has a weak voice. He's not, as he once said to me, I'm not William Jennings Bryan. But I think that's one of the things you can say. He's a gambler. He is somebody who plays his cards close to his chest. And he's basically an inside player.
But is he a nice guy?
No, he's not a nice guy. And he could not have gotten as far as he's gotten if he were a nice guy. He's a tough combatant. He's somebody who started out in Kentucky at a time when Republicans weren't all that popular. And he's built a political career. He started out by really running one of the most effective political ads, a nasty negative ad against Dee Huddleston, who was the incumbent Democratic senator, which stands as a model for negative advertising. He climbed the ladder of seniority within the Republican Party. He kind of stood on the sidelines while Bill Frist, somebody who was very unsuited to be the Republican leader in the Senate, basically floundered and used his opportunities and got the leadership position.
Ross K. Baker is professor of political science at Rutgers University. He received his PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. And most importantly, he was scholar in residence in the office of Majority Leader Harry Reid. Ross, congratulations on the new book. Can't wait to read it. And we'll be back with more the next time.
Thanks, Alan.